Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like monks at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone.
It is our 50th episode, which is pretty cool in and of itself. Yeah, our first major anniversary. So, run through some stats here. We've had over 50,000 downloads.
I reckon getting our second show was also a big achievement.
That was a huge achievement. 50,000 downloads. Wow. We've interviewed Andrew Bogut. We've interviewed North Korean defectors. We've been on New York radio. It's been a hell of a journey for us both. So thank you guys for sticking around and listening and downloading and subscribing, telling your friends, et cetera, et cetera. It's been awesome. So huge show for you guys coming up today. We have got our executive director on the show for the first time, John Roskam.
Very excited, very nervous. I need this job. So no tough questions from either of you.
Okay, cool. I think we'll be okay. We're going to be talking about the big picture issues facing Australia and what the IPA's got planned. It's obviously, another big anniversary is that it is the IPA's 75th year of existence. So we'll be talking about what the IPA's been doing for 75 years.
And biggest anniversary of the day.
I think so. And what the IPA's going to be doing for the next 75 years. Pretty big week of stories around the world, but I should mention we are recording this a day early. I do have to be out of here on Friday for some personal reasons, so I think just in case a big story happens overnight, Pete, we should be the first podcast to talk about it that people hear. So what did you think of that big story that broke on Thursday night?
Well, I was shocked, James. Shocked and appalled. Yeah, so if Trump resigns or China says, you know what, now we're a democracy,
we're covered.
We didn't. I wouldn't be appalled by that.
Yeah, that would be good. Also like to respond to last night's amazing events, which is I can't believe that both Australian major political parties have reacted so poorly, and I don't think this is great for the idea of Australians' liberty. I think that should cover me of anything that would happen.
That's a kind of catch-all response to much anything that comes out of Canberra.
Basically, so stuff that we do know happened this week. So we'll talk the first off. Donald Trump has sort of really sounded the war drums on potential tariffs and a trade war, which sends shivers down our spine as a free market think tank.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, obviously no hard and fast proposals have come in through as of yet, which is a shocking thing to happen for the Trump administration, no hard and fast proposals. But he has been tweeting a lot about protectionist policies, especially on aluminium and steel. And also one of Trump's chief economic advisors has resigned. So that's sort of an indication that, and he was a big free market guy. So him leaving the White House is sort of a sign that he's gone, you know what, we've lost the protectionist argument. So these tariffs are probably going to come through. It's looking like it's going to be a 25% tax on steel imports and a 10% on aluminium.
Yeah. So,
what are your thoughts, Pete?
Well, obviously, the big knock on Trump has always been that this protectionist sort of strain that he's had, and it's sort of come to fruition, which is a really bad sign. It's bad for American consumers. It's bad for American workers. The CEO of the Beer Institute, what a job, by the way, has pointed out that the cost of beer will go up. The thing that I was thinking about, and there's probably more qualified people to speak about this than me,
I can't think of any.
Is that so? If this is some kind of ruse to get other countries to reduce their tariffs, and we all end up with a freer trading world, and that's great. If it's not, it's terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, usually Trump has used these sort of big announcements, like the Rocket Man tweets on North Korea, to like be part of a wider push. So obviously, if it is part of a wider push to lower imports, that lower tariffs, that'd be good.
Yeah,
I'm starting to doubt it. It's been a pretty protectionist thing, and obviously, we also have the wall and caps on immigration. So there is a sort of protectionist America First feel to this, and it's pretty concerning. Pete, so should we also talk Italy elections?
Yeah. Well, this was good news in a sense and bad news in another sense. It's good news because an anti-EU and anti-establishment... Sorry, so it's another anti-EU and anti-establishment result. The two major parties in Italy, the centre-left party and the centre-right party, Berlusconi in charge of the centre-right party.
I'm so glad he's still around.
Yeah, he's entertaining. He's not necessarily going for Italy.
I just love, like, I don't claim to be a huge expert in Italian politics, so I don't know what he's doing. But the fact that he could go through all the, like, the bunga bunga stories, and he's still here a few years later.
Yeah, he's over 80. He's over 80 and owns, like, AC Milan. And he was confronted, actually, by a topless protester during the campaign, which I'm sure he hated.
Yeah, it's a great way to get Berlusconi's attention.
Well, the photo made it look like the protester had achieved their aim in that regard. So anyway, Berlusconi said the centre right. So the result that the party that won is a populist party, a genuine populist party. Sorry, didn't win. Got the most of the vote. Got 32% of the vote. It still seems like the coalition between Berlusconi or the centre right party and their kind of Christian Democrats micro party in Italy will be the most likely to get the most votes once they form that coalition. But over 50% of the people that did vote voted for non-establishment parties and driven largely by Euroscepticism. The other thing that happened was that... So I'm not exactly sure how the Italian political system works, as you probably would assume, but somehow the guy who's in charge of the party that got 33% of the vote, which is called the... what are they called? What?
I'll go for it.
Five-star movement.
Yep.
Five-star
I thought you were going to go for the Italian pronunciation.
Oh, no. How do you pronounce five? Yeah. So he will probably end up prime minister anyway, but it is still all in flux, but... That's the two messages, James.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously this is a huge sort of win for anti-establishment parties. And yeah. It does get to a point with politics around the world where every vote of an anti-establishment party is sort of just seen as like, is this nation's Brexit? Which gets a bit long in the tooth. But I think this is basically it. I mean, both major parties that have come out of nowhere, like the guy who's going to be prime minister, the Luigi Di Maio guy who's in charge of Five Star Movement.
He's 31.
Like 31. Yeah, which is crazy. So people are really sort of fed up with the political system. You also got the other guy who's recently risen up to power, which is Matteo Salvini.
Mm.
So he's the leader of the other sort of anti-establishment party. He tweeted out, he quoted, I have to say thank you to Jean-Claude Juncker. Every time he speaks, I gain votes, which is such a good one. Yeah. Like Juncker has got to be, has to be starting to realize that every time he says anything, the vote against EU parties goes up. Like, he has some sort of idea that this is going on.
Yeah, well, obviously, it creates a bit of political chaos in Italy, but it's good for the demise of the EU.
Yeah, so Di Maio, obviously 31, coming out of nowhere. Not a lot of people know about him. We don't really know if he's left-wing or right-wing, so I've found some of his policy positions, so we'll try and piece it together. So he's talked about a universal income for the poverty-stricken.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too sure about that.
Yeah,
making it easier for young Italians to start a family. I don't know how the government's going to do that.
I can think of a few ways
which would be really weird. Cutting business taxes, good.
Yeah.
But we're back. Investing in education, 50-50. I don't quite know what that means. And repealing what he called useless laws, which I'm always for.
Yeah, okay.
And you don't get enough politicians that get up and say, I want to repeal useless laws.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, so far, so good. The really cool thing, and we're going to feature this in Hey, What Did I Miss? So make sure you guys are looking out for that email. There's like a map of Italy, and it shows where people are voting. And it's crazy to see that the centre-right party completely controls the north. Like, and you draw a straight line through it. But like centre-right party, all about the north.
Mm-hmm.
Five-star movement, all about the south. And then the major cities are voting for the centre-left parties, which, again, takes us back to the Brexit, where it was like, you know, London and Manchester would vote for staying in, and then everywhere else was voting to leave.
Yeah, and the north is more prosperous than the south as well.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting, like, again, it's the bubble of, you know, you get these intelligentsia in the inner cities that completely forget what it's like for other people, and then they turn around and go, how do these other people stop voting for us?
Yeah.
Where are they going?
And there's
why can't they see that all of my policies that work? Right.
Yeah. No, and there's an economic component to this as well. James, the third highest sovereign debt in the world in Italy, 11.1% unemployment and 31.5% youth unemployment in Italy at the moment.
Which is crazy. So, yeah, hopefully it is a bit easier to start a business because that's crazy. Cool, so we'll now go to interviews with John Roskam. So we're going to be talking about those big picture things. But before we do, 50 episodes, we need support. Nina, how can people support this podcast and the other stuff that the IPA does?
If you'd like to support us, just click join button on the ipa.org.au, and starting as low as $22 per year, you can become a member by supporting us. And you'll also get four free copies of IPA Reviews magazines and also free access to a weekly email, Hey, What Did I Miss?
Very cool. And if you guys like the podcast, make sure you're subscribed on iTunes, SoundCloud. We're also available on our website and through our Hey, What Did I Miss email. If you are listening on iTunes, make sure you leave us a 5-star review. It helps us out with the rankings. And make sure you're telling as many friends as you can to listen to the podcast and spread the word and keep us going for another 50. And, you know, we'll see how many episodes we get after that.
All right, here I am with John Roskam, the executive director of the IPA. He decided to come on the show on our 50th anniversary. Unfortunately, James can't be with us, but John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Peter. Hello, Nina. Great to be with you. Thank you for the invitation.
No problem. No problem. It was great. So,
congratulations on your anniversary.
Well,
big year of anniversaries for the IPA.
It is a big year of anniversary for the IPA, John. That's right. The 50 show anniversary for the podcast and the 75-year anniversary for the IPA.
Do you think they knew about podcasts in 1943, Pete?
I'm not sure. Was it in the founding documents, anything about that?
Well, there was a lot about communications, actually, a lot about reaching out to the public.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, the IPA had its own radio show.
Really?
So maybe we've come full circle.
I didn't know that. That's amazing. So was that like on AM or?
The IPA used to buy time on radio stations. The Labor Party had a show, the UAP, then the precursor to the Liberals had a show. It was very popular.
I did not know that. There you go. Always been at the cutting edge of communications, the IPA, which brings us to our first question. This podcast is a very small part of, well, a growing part of the digital...
Oh, and a very important part, Peter.
A very important part of the digital transformation that is taking place in our political discourse around the world. Where do you see the IPA's role in that, and what comments do you have about that digital transformation?
That's a key question, Peter, and I'm delighted that you and James and all of the team at the IPA are part of that. I think right now we are going through the democratisation of ideas, analysis, comment, the fact that we can now have a weekly podcast. I think we've had something like 38,000 downloads. Congratulations, Peter, it's a week of congratulations hitting top 30 in politics and current affairs downloads. Means that we can take our message to many more people. We're not mediated through the mainstream media anymore. We can be listened to and accessed off our phones, at home. We've now got the situation whereby international commentators and analysts are household names in Australia. I went to see Jordan Peterson last night, which was fantastic, which we can talk about. I am really excited by the potential, and not that I think we would ever have a spin-off of this podcast, Peter, because, you know, you can't have Dallas and Dynasty, but this is only the beginning. I think in the next 12 months we're going to be looking at more podcasts. We're hoping to expand our studio so that you can be stopped in the street.
That's right. That's right. Recognised in the street
for doing a podcast.
Yeah, hopefully.
That was my pre-prepared joke.
That's right. No, that was good.
Nina, even Nina's smiling.
Yeah, Nina likes that one. So,
but no, the future is very bright and very exciting. And one of the challenges is that while we do these things, it can't detract from our research. And what it does do is we can still do the 100-page report.
Mm-hmm.
We'll publish it. We'll communicate that to our members and stakeholders and politicians and the media. But then we can come on the podcast and talk about it. We can cut videos. I mean, I think last year we had something like 1.49 million minutes of IPA videos that were watched, which is just fantastic. When Simon Breeny can cut a video on the tragedy of the QUT case and talk about freedom of speech, and we can get that to 100, 120,000 people, we now have the capacity to rival in reach and audience hard copy newspapers, which I think is terrific. In my view is that in the world of the internet and cyberspace, the best idea wins.
So this is a different line than you hear mostly from the mainstream media. The mainstream media is telling us our discourse is becoming more hysterical, and particularly through social media and the comment section of newspapers, we're actually treating each other worse. You're saying that this is actually opening up the discourse to ordinary people and other bodies.
Look, I think it absolutely is. There's a couple of questions around this. Look, there is a tendency that the new media allows us to do, which is to talk to ourselves and only to listen to people we agree with. I can happily spend a couple of hours reading the comments section after an Andrew Bolt or Janet Albrightson piece, but it's also a challenge to go beyond that. But I think what it does mean is we can explore many more ideas. I think sometimes we do have to meet in the middle and exchange ideas. But I see now the capacity for a discussion about a wide range of topics that never, ever would have permeated through the mainstream media. So, for example, Jordan Peterson, who's in Australia at the moment, in preparation for this podcast, I did do some important preparation, Peter. I Googled ABC News, Jordan Peterson. Not a single mention of the visit of a professor from the University of Toronto who now has 40 million views of his videos.
It's
not
just
a single,
so telling.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does mean that we can now talk to people and people can share ideas that were basically ignored. And the fact that Peterson is speaking at sold-out events in Melbourne, in Sydney and Brisbane, when he's basically as yet been ignored by the mainstream press, speaks volume. At the moment, he is the best-selling non-fiction author in the world, and in Canada they're very excited because he could be Canada's best-selling author one day.
Wow.
Which is important if you're Canadian, but it's important if you care about the discussion of ideas.
Okay, so we did try to get Jordan Peterson on the program. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to do it.
He was talking to his 40 million fans. Well, next time we'll have him on the podcast.
That's right, next time.
He said last night in the last 6 months he's had something like 30,000 pieces of mail, and he didn't even admit to trying to read all of them.
Yeah, there you go. So tell us.
I think he samples them.
Yeah. Does he have an assistant that gives him like a cross section or anything like that? Or?
You'd hope so. He probably has three or four. But what struck me, there were many things that struck me about his remarkable performance last night, but every lecture covers some of the same themes, but is also different and unique.
Okay. Was there anything else from last night about the crowd or the vibe?
I was probably the only guy sitting in the aisle that didn't have a tattoo.
Okay. There were you don't have a tattoo?
Well, I nearly did put one on for the Western Bulldogs glorious premiership victory, but I'm waiting for a 2018 victory to put that on my ankle. A couple of things that struck me about the Jordan Peterson lecture last night, and go to what we're just talking about. Something like 60 or 70% of the audience was under the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is tremendously exciting. About 60 or 70% of the audience was male, which speaks to the desire of young males to be challenged and to hear new ideas. And there was a real willingness to be challenged by ideas. And the point about Jordan Peterson is his lectures go for 2 hours, his videos go for 2.5 hours at a stretch, and at a time when we're saying everything has to be bite-sized and everything has to be comprehensible quickly and everything has to be a Twitter post, we've got Jordan Peterson talking about big, challenging ideas, and people are walking through the doors in their droves. And young people particularly want to be challenged and engaged, and young people are accessing ideas through technology in a way which, as I said, never used to be able to be done.
You told me earlier an anecdote about one of his stories about a 6th century icon and how that was not the kind of thing you would expect someone to give to an audience of under 30s. Do you want to just run through that for
everyone? Well, thanks. And this speaks to the point about young people and all of us being challenged. So, as I said, there was a very young crowd at Jordan Peterson, and in the questions afterwards, he had a range of queries ranging from, is it okay to do graffiti? To my great relief, he said, yes, as long as it's not on your own property. He had a question from a father-to-be about how to bring up a child. So he managed to answer that question in about 5 minutes when he could have gone on for about 2 weeks. Basically, he said, be strict. He had a question from a young person about open relationships, and the collective jaw of the audience dropped, and he gave a very good answer about being responsible for yourself and for each other. So at one level, there was a real desire to be told and to get instructions on how to live. And I was intrigued when, as you commented just then, he started his two-hour lecture with a 20-minute discourse about a 6th-century icon of Christ from St. Catherine's Monastery in the Sinai. And the point that he was referring to, and I don't think there were, I'd heard of the icon, I hadn't seen it until I went home and Googled it. I don't think there would have been a single person in the audience familiar with the pictorial representation that he was talking about but he's talked about it for 20 minutes. Everyone was absolutely engaged and it was really hard. And I wouldn't have imagined that that guy who came along to hear Peterson and who wanted to ask the question about graffiti was expecting to get a 20-minute exegesis on Christian iconography. But for me, this is the point, that Peterson takes people seriously. He challenges them. He gets them talking and thinking about new ways of understanding their place in the world. After about 20 minutes when Jordan did get to the point of his discussion of this icon, he discussed the concept that what people were trying to do 1,400 years ago was represent the duality of Christ, which is, in Jordan Peterson's view, the duality of humanity, meaning and meaninglessness, good and bad, heaven and hell. And then he proceeded to talk for 2 hours about this continual struggle of human existence, the search for meaning. And he made a couple of points along that. One of them was having a purpose, having a meaning is a lot more important than having an emotion of happiness or sadness, which pass. But meaning helps you get through life. Meaning gives meaning to other people. Meaning gives you responsibility. And of course, when you're responsible, you have to bear the responsibility of acting or not acting.
Nana's nodding along.
Without trying to sound like Jordan Peterson.
Nana's nodding along to that. She agrees wholeheartedly. So enough about Jordan Peterson. What do we have to do here in Australia to get someone like Jordan Peterson or Ruben or Shapiro? How do we get a star that big? But
I'm talking to them right now, okay. Peter.
So with, through the IPA, is that?
Well, one of the things that the IPA does and what I'm so pleased about that we do with Hey, What Did I Miss? With our podcast, with all of our written material and our published material, is expose people, particularly young people, to the world of ideas that goes beyond the Sydney-Melbourne triangle, that goes beyond what they get in the university lecture theatres, that goes beyond what they get in their classrooms. We've got 1,000 young members through our Generation Liberty program, and what we try and do is let them know about the world beyond our shores. There are a lot of people asking these big questions. We've got Dennis Prager coming to Australia to give a series of lectures in a couple of weeks. Prager University is now getting tens of millions of hits. And again, it's something that has had very little publicity in the mainstream media, but is something that is really important to talk about and to encourage people to engage in.
All right. So, we'd love to have you back again soon, John.
I'd love to be invited, Peter.
Well, the standing invitation.
Who clears the guests, you or James?
Oh, it's collaborative. We're all collaborative. With Nina in charge, of course, being the real boss. What is specifically on the table for the IPA over the next year and the next 5 years?
Well, as we celebrate our 75th anniversary, communication of ideas, our work with young people is really important. We continue to expand our research program. As you know, the research program of the IPA centered around the themes of future, freedom, opportunity, and prosperity is very significant. I'm very excited about our Dignity of Work program that will focus on getting some of those 700,000 Australians without a job back into work, giving them the dignity of work, allowing them to experience human flourishing, I think is very significant. The ongoing challenge for the IPA, as it has been for 75 years, is to talk about our ideas and our policy in human terms. And that's what we're now doing through a variety of means. I'm incredibly optimistic about the future because people want to learn, people want to be challenged.
No worries, John. Thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me, Peter, and thank you, Nina.
Okay, thank you to John Roskin for that interview. Really interesting stuff. So we'll now fly through some stories that made us laugh this week. I would like to start with Service New South Wales.
I would like to start there too.
Yeah, cool. Is that because you were going to introduce it or was I going to introduce
it? No, you're going to introduce it.
Oh, good.
I just want to be interested to hear what you have to say.
Oh, good. I faded out of the last minute of that podcast meeting. That's where I'd stepped on your toes. Anyway, let's get to it. New South Wales government agency, Serve New South Wales, has been asked to justify the purchase of self-help books as part of a training program that is costing taxpayers nearly $600,000. So here's a story. This Service New South Wales bought 90 copies of the book Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. 90 copies.
Okay.
So they've either jumped up in prices or these training guys have taken them for an absolute ride.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's costing taxpayers $600,000.
You always mark up the government.
Yeah.
Contractors know that.
That's the thing. So I was going to say, like, did the guy who originally pitched this just get away with whatever with $600,000, or do they go, look, we can't give you $1 million for this.
Yeah.
Can we talk you down to $600,000?
Yeah, just add 20%.
Yeah, absolutely. I also like what gets knocked back at this point? What would Service New South Wales say no to?
Yeah.
If they're saying yes to $600,000 for 90 copies of Seven Habits of Highly Effective, which is like really widely available and widely bought. It's not just like, wow, this is a really niche book.
And it's old. It's like a decade old.
Yeah. Oh, God. Can I run you through the Seven Habits? Because I was like, well, maybe one of them is like charge the government overs for,
Just let me get a pen first. I wouldn't mind writing these down.
Be proactive.
Yeah, good. I don't mind that.
Yeah, I'd pay a lot of money for someone to tell me to do that. Begin with the end in mind.
Yeah, good.
Put first things first. I hate it people who put third things first.
How do you know it's first? Oh, that doesn't explain what you
do. Oh, because he put it first. That makes it first.
Okay.
But put first things first, Pete.
Yeah.
Begin with the end in mind, but don't put the end first.
Yeah.
It's a bit counterintuitive, but that's why you're not effective.
Mm-hmm.
Think win-win. Stop thinking loss-loss.
Yeah.
This book is so stupid. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. That is the worst sentence I've ever heard. Synergize. Never enough synergy. Sharpen the saw. And the eighth habit is find your voice and inspires others to find theirs. Now, this is where I take umbrage. First off, you said seven habits. Call it eight habits. But the eighth habit, find your voice and inspire others to find theirs. Which Service New South Wales is not doing because they found someone else's voice and help others to find that voice.
Yeah,
they're not even following the seven habits.
And like, as a bureaucrat, do I need a bureaucrat to tell me how to find my voice?
Yeah, exactly. I can't think of anyone worse than a bureaucrat to help me find my individual voice.
Can I ask a question?
No.
And I think this is the most important question in this whole segment.
Yep.
What is Service New South Wales?
I have no idea.
I don't know. Never heard of it.
Well, now we have heard of it. I think there might just be a giant training program.
Yep.
Taxpayer bleeding.
And I did a little bit of maths, James, which is rare. And I'm not like, no one accuses me of being a mathematician, but I worked out that this was $260 each for 2,300 staff.
Ooh, that's a lot of money.
Yeah,
Pete, shall we move on to another story?
Yep, we can. So China has banned the letter N last week. It was a week or two ago, actually.
What do we call China now?
Yeah.
Chaya.
I didn't think of that. It was only temporarily, though. So, obviously, this was in the context of Xi Jinping controlling, sort of consolidating his power in China and hoping to rule for the rest of his life. They banned a whole lot of stuff to stop people looking up things that might be subversive, including the letter N.
Trash talking him online.
Trash talking him online, exactly. And there's other stuff. George Orwell's 1984 and Animal Farm were also banned.
The words immortality and ascend the throne were also banned.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. So there's been a few things. I read a bit of commentary on it, and one of the commentators was actually, look, this was a pretty rash decision. I wouldn't be surprised if the thinking behind it wasn't that clear. Yeah. So maybe there's no real reason why they did it, and they did reinstate it back onto the search engines.
Yeah. So the leading theory is. And I'm quoting here from CNN. The government likely feared that N was referring to the number of terms of office, as in the mathematical equation N is greater than 2. Probably not.
I didn't say I was a mathematician. Yeah. I didn't say I was a mathematician, but I don't get that.
Yeah.
What do you think, Nana?
Look.
I don't know. It's just weird.
If you want to stamp out suppression, you've got to go to the heart of the matter, and that is the letter N.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'll move on to another one. This is hilarious. So Melbourne Food and Wine Festival's coming up. A lot of fun for all involved, if you like food and wine. Now, and if you like bloodthirsty communist psychopaths as well, you're going to have a good time this week.
Yeah.
Melbourne Food and Wine Festival wanted to have a Shay night. And it was like a culinary tour of South America. you traced Che Guevara through his travels, and you had like culinary nights from the thing. I think they already knew in the back of their minds that they probably shouldn't be doing this. Like, it's literally called a Festival of Che.
Yeah.
So they're like, not only is Che Guevara, you know, this South American hero, Che also means friend.
Yeah.
So we can't get criticized.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Che means friend.
That's what we're covering.
But they did get criticized. Tim Blair, I think, was the first one on it. And they immediately whittled it down to removing any mentions of Che Guevara. And it was just like, no, this is a Festival of Che and Che means friend.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
We don't even know who this guy is.
Who?
And then now they've watered it down. If you go to it today, it's just a culinary tour of South America. Like, yeah. There's no references to Che, nothing at all.
As he said, this is Pete Melbourne. Like, it's you know, government-funded food and wine festival, and yep. It's called Che Guevara. My thing is, though, so no one in this meeting has said, I don't think this is a good idea.
Yeah,
exactly. So no one really knows who he is, basically.
Yeah,
but they know he's cool.
Yeah, I didn't see anything in the program about, like, a, you know, to want a Shay, we're going to kill a homosexual.
Yeah, yeah.
What I like is, like, yeah, so like you said, it's Peak Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. This is 100% the crowd of people that don't know a thing about Che Guevara, but yeah. They wore a shirt about it in their 20s, and one time they saw the Motorcycle Diaries on TV.
Yeah,
like, exactly. That is their entire knowledge of the guy.
What's the Motorcycle Diaries?
It's like a biopic about how he grew up.
Okay.
And he just went around on a motorcycle. And it didn't really cover all the bloodthirsty and killing of innocents. So it was mainly just the I love South America.
So it omits a few choice facts as well.
Yeah, I think, sorry, it'd be like doing The Darkest Hour without covering World War II. It's like...
Yeah. Anyway, Che lives on.
Che does live on.
Okay.
What do you think Che is more annoyed about? Either people abandon him with the slightest sign of Tim Blair coming at them,
yeah.
Or the fact that he's been turned into a capitalist T-shirt,
yeah,
for
exactly.
80 years.
Yeah.
Like, he's got to be rolling over in his grave, which makes me laugh a lot.
He's just be like, you guys don't get it.
Nothing about my work.
Okay, so Qantas, the national carrier, I don't know why they call the national carrier, Qantas, an airline in Australia, has banned, this is Tim Blair as well, he's been on fire this week. Tim Blair has pointed out that have given their staff a language guide which bans a whole lot of words such as guys, what else have we got here? Dale, honey, love, mum and dad. I don't know if that, I couldn't actually find any evidence for that one. Let's maybe not include that one. So it's basically telling their staff that these words are off limits. Use manager instead of foreman, say team, folks, people instead of guys. Don't manterrupt your colleagues.
Yeah. So we know what Justin Trudeau is flying to Australia on next time he comes over.
Well, Justin Trudeau would bloody love it. I love the way that they trust their staff with the lives of hundreds of people, but not to be able to talk to their co-workers.
Yeah, exactly. You glossed over my favourite one. They replaced foreman with manager. That's not okay. Even trying. It's like, the word man is still there. It just got moved to the start of
it.
Oh,
yeah. There's still man.
Yeah, personager.
And manager doesn't mean... Oh, no, they moved it from foreman to manager.
Yeah. Exactly.
But they're still man.
Yeah, that's my point. It's like,
and they're different jobs anyway. Like, a foreman's different to a manager.
Yeah.
A manager sits at a desk. Anyway. And a foreman's
a massive shot at Pete's manager.
A foreman's in the... Anyway. I don't know. There.
The desk jockeys around the
IPA. And obviously, Qantas can do whatever they want.
Yeah, but...
But we can still make fun of them.
Yeah. To bring us back to the 18C debate we had last week.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
they can do this. We can make fun of them as well.
That's right. That's what a free society is.
Yes. I have one more story. So obviously Oscars happened this Monday.
Was Monday. The
Oscars? Yes. Last week we talked to Andy Poon, who's a pretty pretty much ran the gauntlet. I think he predicted 3 billboards to win, which he didn't win.
Wrong.
Yeah. Hmm. Poon.
We know that we won't be inviting him back next year.
Donald Trump, we usually stay away from the podcast from what Donald Trump tweeted. I think there's enough podcasts out there that just sort of read Donald Trump's Twitter feed and freak out for 45 minutes.
Oh, we're a pretty serious policy-based podcast.
Yes, absolutely. But this one I did like. This one I'm willing to break my own rule. Donald Trump tweeted, lowest rated Oscars in history. Problem is we don't have stars anymore, except your president. Just kidding, of course.
He's not joking.
He's not kidding. Just kidding, of course, is the ultimate get out of jail free card. As long, you can say anything as long as you follow with just kidding, of course, in brackets. Donald Trump is right. So the Oscars was down 20% from last year, averaging 26.5 million viewers. It is the first time that the Oscars averaged fewer than 30 million people watching since 1974.
Oh.
And you think, like, how quickly Americans' population's gone up. So yeah, that is such a tiny market.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I just don't know why people aren't tuning in to see a bunch of people who hid Weinstein for two decades lecture us about feminism. I don't know what the appeal is there.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, obviously, like, it was very politically charged. Like, as I said last week, Jimmy Kimmel 2.5 mentions of Trump hit the over very quickly. A lot of guys at it.
How many did you get?
Oh, I didn't watch the Oscars. I'm one of the millions of people that had better things to do with their time.
So, but you won the bet, though?
No, I never put money on it. But it's like, you know, The Shape of Water. Sorry, no, what did he do? Call Me By Your Name. We don't make Call Me By Your Name to make money. We do it to annoy Mike Pence. Average, but it's like very preachy stuff. And so my big tip to the Oscars next year, you've got to have more people read out the wrong names. You need more mishaps. Yeah. Like the biggest cultural moment that came out of the Oscars was the meme of Jennifer Garner looking confused. And if that's like the biggest moment from 4 hours of television,
yeah,
things are bad.
Let's have it a bit more freestyle.
Yeah. Also, why did The Shape of Water win?
Like, I don't know what that is.
Okay. So that's, let me hit you with a hook for this movie and see if you'd watch it.
Okay.
The Shape of Water is about a woman who starts working at like this government testing facility where they're trying to grow like a fish man kind of thing. I haven't seen the movie either, but like I don't know what they're trying to use it for. She falls in love with the fish man.
Oh, no, I have seen this.
Oh, you have seen it? Have you seen the movie?
Yeah, I liked it.
How did that win Best Picture?
Do you know what? I watched it with my sister and she says, this sounds stupid, but I think it's actually pretty good.
Oh, okay.
It was nice.
All right.
I don't know if it was Best Picture material.
I think, and it seems to be the leading one. Like
Morgan's
put an article in Hey this week, so you can check it out, basically saying how The Shape of Water is like this intersectionalist, you know, anti-society kind of celebration. Obviously, like, the best picture winner for the woke decade, I guess, was the kind of takeaway from it. I think it's this generation's crash, like this decade's crash, when Crash won over like Brokeback Mountain and Capote and all that stuff.
Yep. The
Oscar's best picture should be given 5 years later. This is my big takeaway. This is a theory, like Bill Simmons used to have this a lot. the Oscars this year should be deciding the best picture from 2013 because you don't know what's going to hold up.
Mm.
That's interesting.
And I'm also keen for no Oscars for 5 years.
Did you watch the Oscars, Nina?
No. I completely forgot about it.
We were all at work, Pete.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah.
I was in Lawn.
Okay, cool.
I wasn't working.
Okay.
Right. Let's talk beer.
Okay, well, it might surprise listeners to know that I keep a pretty close eye on the frothy industry. And it has emerged. Did you know what people of Australia and the world... Perth, WA is at the height of a price war over beers, and pubs in Perth are selling beers for very, very low prices.
Shock and horror.
Well, Perth is famous for having really expensive booze, but this is pints in Perth as low as $3.50 Australian. The booze war has been brewing for some time. It's because, you know what, this is sort of economics, but... A number of publicans have thought, okay, if we sell beers heaps cheaper, we'll get heaps more people in and we'll actually end up making more money, which is great.
It's actually bad news, Pete.
Well, it is bad news.
Yeah, people drinking for cheaper actually bad news.
So a guy said that he was only getting 50 people into his pub on a Sunday afternoon. I can't find the name of the pub. But now he gets almost 500 people. Doofus of the week, WA Health Minister Roger Cook.
So new this is segment, lock it in stone. That is a new segment.
I put it underlined, doofus. Yeah. How good is this, right? Cheap beer, people are out and about, engaging in community, you know, talking to each other, drinking frothies, not losing money as much.
I'm very proud of you for leaving drinking frothies for fourth item.
Yeah, exactly. This should have been at the top. And then so despite all these good things and no negative benefits, WA Health Minister Roger Cook has said, there's concern about binge drinking. This is his quote. It strikes me that that is a very low price. Yes, Roger. What that suggests to me is that they're encouraging dangerous levels of consumption of alcohol, which leads to dangerous situations. Yeah, like being awesome. And he says he wants to see a floor price on alcohol in WA. Hopefully he doesn't get his way. I don't think that would be very electrically popular.
No.
with the good people of Western Australia.
I also like him saying that this strikes me as a very low price because the man's never had a beer in his life.
Yeah, yeah, this seems like it could
that,
be low.
Is that high or low?
Right, that is so low. That is so low. Coming from the CBD in Melbourne.
Yeah, I recommend he moves to America where the price of beer is about to skyrocket thanks to these aluminium things.
There you go.
Cool, so that's it for the show this week. Thanks again. Obviously, 50 episodes down is a pretty huge milestone. So thanks so much for listening and subscribing all the time. We really appreciate it. If you like this podcast, if you like what we're about, make sure you subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, our website, or through Hey, What Did I Miss?
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes.
Yep.
And yeah, you can put in a comment, maybe a tip for the show, maybe your own Q&A clap of the week. And yeah, that'd be really helpful. Make sure you're also listening, telling your friends about the show. Nina, if yeah. people like the podcast and they want to help us out with a bit of the financial matters. I'm making the
cash sign.
Yeah, making the cash sign. Just imagine it. How can they help?
So the best way for you to help us and support us actually to become a member. So just visit our website on rpa.org.au and click on on that join button. And starting as low as $22, you can become a member for a year and you will receive 4 free copies of IPA reviews, magazines, and also free access to Hey, What Did I Miss? Weekly emails.
Very cool. See you guys next week.
See ya. Shoveled up like months at the night on back for complete truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love. Yeah.